ArcelorMittal has found a way to more secure some of the supplies that they need to make sure that the Chicago mill is cranking out steel as it has for so many years. ArcelorMittal signed a 10-year deal to be able to bring iron ore in from the places that it finds as its suppliers. And we find out more about that and checking in with Joseph Pete, who's a business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana. Joe's with us from his desk at the Times office in Munster. Hi, Joseph. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, hi, Chris. Happy to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about some of the planning and such, apparently, that went behind ArcelorMittal coming up with this deal for iron ore, and who's their supplier?
Oh, yes. They hired they continued their relationship with Cliffs Natural Resources, which operates multiple mines in iron ore mines in Minnesota and Michigan. And they're currently providing much of the iron ore already to Indiana Harbor West and some other, some of it to Indiana Harbor East as well. This is generally considered a pretty good sign because it's a 10-year deal, and they're very optimistic both sides about volumes. They're going to send as many as 10 million tons a year with a minimum of 7 million tons, and it's an increase in what they're receiving now, so it kind of signals some optimism about demand for steel in the United States.
I get the impression that Cliffs Natural Resources is a pretty big player in what we consider as a supplier of iron ore to not only to ArcelorMittal, but probably to some of the other mills here too, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. They also supply U.S. Steel is a little more integrated still, but they're also a supplier to them. But this was huge for them, especially because ArcelorMittal is like by far their largest customer. I think that they single-handedly account for like half their business, and their stock skyrocketed by more than 50 cents a share after the deal was announced, because there's been a lot of obviously uncertainty in the steel industry lately, and some analysts have been really, you know, down on the future and future earnings. But steel prices have been skyrocketing, fortunately, as some of these some of the trade cases have been kind of taking effect and making an impact. Mm-hmm. Steel coils, hot roll coil, is selling for like over, you know, $680 a ton, and it's well above where it had bottomed out, last year when we were flooded with an unprecedented amount of imports. But this gives them some assurance that, you know, they're going to be able to count on ArcelorMittal for a significant amount of revenue over the next decade.
I know that. We'll hear more from Senator Joe Donnelly here. I had a chance to talk with him here on Friday about some of the steel industry issues in particular, and he actually got a chance to tour the U.S. steel plant in Gary. We also know, too, that ArcelorMittal had mentioned as well that, you know, they're I guess, trying to do their best here, and from what I understand, they probably worked very hard to come up with a good deal to be sure that they get the right supplies at the right price, even though they know that they may be doing a little better, even with all the problems overseas with of dumping of foreign steel into the market.
Oh, absolutely. They're not disclosing the exact terms of the deal they have with Cliffs, which is customary because it's very it's for competitive reasons. They don't want their competitors knowing, but they do have this does. There will be idling some lines at any Chicago soon, but this kind of signifies that, hey, at least they're optimistic about the facility for the short term and everything.
Well,
they're going to be scaling back on capacity and shutting down some finishing lines.
I was wondering, I know that you mentioned before in some of our other conversations about the fact that we know that ArcelorMittal has got some plans for doing some cutbacks here and the like here. They've talked about this. I guess they're also their tin process facility is one of these that's going to close up here before long. And I wondered how having this this new supply deal is going to affect the overall business for them.
Oh, well, they're looking at closing the 84-inch hot strip mill. They're looking at closing the number two steel shop, the number one aluminizing line, and the number five continuous galvanized line. As they had negotiated with the union on that, they've been saying for a long time now that there's too much capacity in the United States. They didn't want to close any blast furnaces because they don't want to lose any market share to competitors. But they're wanting to shut down some of their finishing lines, take it offline, help kind of stabilize prices more and stabilize the market. Because where it was at last year is they were losing money You know, the big integrated mills we have in Northwest Indiana, they have huge fixed costs. Like, you know, the blast furnaces have to run 24/7.
Oh, yeah.
You have to have so much labor. Like, if your prices aren't, if pricing isn't high enough to cover the fixed costs, you're kind of in a really bad place. And that's where they were, and that's kind of what they're looking to, like, claw out of. So they're going to be operating fewer finishing lines there, but they're at least a long-term deal now to bring in iron ore, or to continue to bring in iron ore. So they're not, you know, abandoning or forsaking the U.S. operations. They have talked about, and they are now, you know, changing the scale that they're going to operate here in North America, but they're at least committed to, maintaining what they have here.
Mm-hmm.
It's important because they are the largest, they are the largest steel maker in the world by far, and they operate pretty much on everywhere across the world. And they make twice as much steel as the next biggest competitor. So if not them, I don't know who would, you know, step in.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. They're true. We're talking with Joseph Pete, who's a business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana, about ArcelorMittal signing a 10-year agreement to bring iron ore into East Chicago. It's with Cliffs Natural Resources up in the iron ore range up in Minnesota here. I understand this agreement is, I guess, taking care of one that was, I guess, technically had expired, but I'm sure they probably have been working on a temporary basis until they got the paperwork signed on this one, wasn't it?
Oh, it was due to expire at the end of the year, and they kind of announced it early. I'm not sure exactly how long the negotiations had been going on for, but they had, this is one of their most key inputs to, iron ore to steelmaking, and, you know, this is something that they...
Right.
Rely on, but the biggest thing is that they seem to be really optimistic about the volumes, because they're saying that they agreed to, like, a minimum now where it's going to be like 7 million tons, and that they're expecting, you know, maybe like up to 10 million tons to bring in, so that they're the fact that they put that in a contract signifies that they're somewhat optimistic about the market here in the United States recovering, and about there being, you know, strong and steady demand for years to come.
Do you think that the fact that ArcelorMittal managed to come up with at least now a tentative agreement on their labor issues with the United Steelworkers Union maybe kind of led the way to get these things going, that they have one side of their costs pretty much determined here, that if the union agrees to the terms of the tentative agreement, and that means that, of course, then they can kind of lock into some price changes and the like here and pretty much firm up the other side, the iron ore side?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that had been a long time in coming, but they had wanted to be a little more aggressive in cost cutting with that, but the union held strong and held firm.
Okay.
And, you know, preserved their benefits. Like, they had wanted, you know, they're looking at potential, like, $3,000 a year, like, pay cuts in effect, because, you know, that's what they would have been paying in, like, monthly premium contributions if they had a family. But the union resisted that, and they managed to, to avoid that happening. Arcelor did get some minor concessions on some of, like, the healthcare costs and those types of things, but they have everything in place for their the biggest thing, though, as far as their operating costs, was definitely the closing of those lines. They're going to invest in some others at Indiana Harbor. Like, mm-hmm. They're going to upgrade the number 3 steel shop with a new caster. They're going to invest in the number 4 steel shop. They're going to, you know, put $200 million in the 80-inch hot strip mill. They're going to, you know, they're looking at, like, investing there, but they're going to be able to run more leanly and efficiently when they're operating fewer finishing lines.
Yep.
You just have fewer costs. And
it sounds like that they're just basically shifting to the east. They're taking more features of their older mill, the more established mill there in East Chicago, and they're moving it to the east a little further along the lakefront to their newer facility there where they have it off to the east there, apparently, right?
Oh, yes. It depends on which line it is, but the east is definitely the stronger and more vibrant of the two, I guess. But it's kind of on a case by case basis of what they've been working for over a year now to determine kind of. They'd done this in Europe before, where they're kind of just analyzing, well, what's, you know, what can we run most efficiently, where we're going to be, it's going to be most profitable, and, you know, what is kind of, but they've been continuously saying, like, the last year of steelmaking capacity utilization had been, like, under 70% or so. So you have, like, 30% of, you know, the nation's mills and finishing lines, like, sitting idle at any, you know, given time, and that's just not, you know, sustainable. Like they've said, you know, analysts believe it's got to be over like 90% to be healthy. You just can't have like that much, you can't be operating that much where it's not like producing anything. And so they're just looking at like firming up what's most profitable to run. They're going to be operating fewer lines, but they're going to be doing it more efficiently and more profitably. And they think that's kind of, you know, it's been really ugly for the industry lately, but, yeah, you know, they'll be stronger after restructuring and, yeah, and fortunately, you know, there are no layoffs. The union got that as an agreement. Like, everybody's going to be displaced will be able to transfer to, one of the other, many other Northwest Indiana mills or Riverdale. And, you know, there won't be any job losses as a result of that. But the company will be kind of, you know, leaner and, you know, tougher and better positioned to deal with, like, downturns like the one we just suffered.
We're talking with the Northwest Indiana Times business reporter, Joseph Pete, about ArcelorMittal. We were talking just a moment ago here about the fact that, and you mentioned here about the cost changes that the company is going to see with the tentative agreement that they've signed with the United Steelworkers Union. And I understand that at least one of the locals, 1010, which is based out of East Chicago, had a chance to offer some details of this tentative agreement to some of their members here over the weekend. What have we learned about people seem to think about this agreement that is up before the union now to review?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they had they're starting to have the meetings and everything on the explaining the contract and its summaries. And those are closed to the media, unfortunately. They don't they wouldn't let us go in to cover that. But generally, from steelworkers I've talked to, there's a general just sense of like relief about, you know, finally having a deal after having uncertainty for so long. And then, you know, ArcelorMittal had been looking at some pretty draconian cuts, like $3,000 a year, and new premium contributions that they never had to pay before but would have had to pay. And then they were looking at like tier one. They absolutely hate that in the auto industry. They're looking at kind of like a tier one, tier two situation where, you know, that you'd have like newer workers coming in with fewer benefits and lower salaries. They're looking at slashing vacation pay. They're looking at increasing contributions for retirees. They were looking at, you know, slashing benefits. Like, it was, you know, they came at it from a very aggressive position, and the union was able to hold the line on a lot of that. And I think people are just kind of glad that they're not, they're not going to be suffering like effective pay cuts from having so much, having to pay so much more for health insurance and those kind of things. There are, like, the union did agree to, I'm sorry, the company did agree to, that they're waiving the deductibles. They're agreed to invest $2.5 billion here in the United States to kind of like shore up some of the facilities in East Chicago and elsewhere to kind of ensure that, hey, while they're closing some facilities, they're going to put money into others to make sure that they're still, the finishing lines are still strong and going to be able to run profitable for many years to come. And that's important because the union was very big on that, because that, you know, that ensures some, you know, job security and stability, and that, you know, so some lines may be closed, but they're not going to invest and then, you know, pump, you know, $2.5 billion and then just, you know, close them left and right. They're going to want to recoup their investment. And then, but they got, while there are no pay raises, they have, they're going to get bonuses of like 50 cents per hour if hot rolled steel prices are above like 600 per ton. And they have been like lately, if they average out like a quarter, that's 600 a ton. So while they're not getting like a raise per se, like if the industry is doing well, the workers will, you know, see some improvement in take-home pay. And that's one thing they've shifted to a lot in the auto industry in recent years with going toward profit sharing, so that, you know, labor costs aren't necessarily dragged down the company like when they're doing bad, but then everybody profits when they're doing well. And like, it's been really good for the Chicago assembly plant over in Haguish, because they've been able to those workers are pulling in like 8,000, 9,000 a year, because Ford has been or extra from bonuses because Ford's been pulling in like record profits. So if, you know, if hot rolled prices stay good, you know, they can potentially see some decent bonuses from, or, you know, from if the prices stay over 600 a ton, you know, they can continue to, or, you know, they the workers here can pull in some bonuses from that. And then there are a couple other, like they have, there's a new experimental child care program they're looking at. They're, you know, adding parental leave. I think there's just such a, it's hard to say how it'll go, but I think a lot of people are just relieved to have any kind of like tentative contract.
Joseph, thank you very much for the update. We really appreciate it, and we'll check back later. And then we'll, of course, keep an eye on your stories in the Times of Northwest Indiana when we see the updates here, especially here as the United Steelworkers Union finally decides to get together and actually cast some votes here on this tentative agreement. Joseph Pete, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris.